Alex shoots one deep the other way. Left center field. Jesus Sanchez will watch this one go. And there's the first career home run for Alec Thomas.
He does, and Yepes drives it out to deep left. It's at the wall. Gone! Juan Yepes, his first home run at Busch Stadium.
2-2. Gonzalez, high drive down the right field line, looking toward the corner, and it is gone! A home run for Luis Gonzalez! His first big league home run puts the Giants ahead 4-2.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jonathan Mayo. No, I did that last week. I'm Jason Ratliff. But Jonathan Mayo is here, as is Jim Callis. And we are, as of today, as we record this, exactly 2 months away from the draft, which means we're going to talk about the draft. We're also going to talk about some upcoming changes to the top 100 prospects list. We're going to look at some hot prospects in both the majors and the minors. We are going to tell you about which minor league games you can watch for free on MLB.tv this week. And we'll wrap up by answering a question from the mailbag. Jonathan, welcome back. How you doing?
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Last week I accidentally identified myself as you.
I'm flattered.
Jim, how are you?
I'm doing well. All good.
Good. New puppy in the house or in the family?
In the house. My daughter has graduated with her master's degree. My daughter Beth has a new puppy, Finn, and she is learning that new puppies are a lot of fun, but also a lot of work. So they are, I believe, out in the family room right now.
Let's talk about the draft. 2 months away, you guys are in the process of expanding our top draft prospects list yet again. Started out at 100 in January, expanded it to 150 in April. About a month later now, we will be expanding it yet again. There was some news over the past few days, over the past week, about the draft. And one of the biggest names, if not the biggest name, in this year's draft class. Is that fair to say, biggest name in this year's draft class?
Most familiar name.
I don't know if I'd say biggest name, but I'd say one of the most famous names.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I was going for. Kumar Rocker. And the news was that, and we'd been wondering about this, and I think we talked about it on previous podcasts, like where is this guy? What's he doing? What's he going to do? And we were waiting and waiting, and we found out late last week that he is headed to Tri-City Valley Cats, formerly of the New York Penn League, now an MLB partner league, indie ball in the Frontier League. And he's headed there to pitch for approximately a month leading up to the draft. Guys, what should we expect here? How often do you think we'll see him pitch? How deep into games do you think we'll see him pitch? What are we thinking here?
Well, I think he'll be on a very controlled plan. And my guess is, I think we've both heard he's going to pitch about a half dozen times between, I don't know if he's officially joined the team. He's not going to pitch right away for him, but a half dozen times between now and the draft. And I would think you'd start him off with shorter outings, and eventually he might work his way up to 4, 5, 6 innings. It's not like, they're going to hand him the ball and expect him to go 9, every time out. I think it's going to be very controlled, a step up from, just throwing bullpens for teams and against some professional level competition. But, I think they're going to be very careful with how he's handled. And obviously the player and his camp are going to dictate to the team how he's going to be used. It's not going to just be, is Pete and Cavilia the manager there? Do we decide?
That's right. No.
It's not just Pete and Cavilia, determining what the game situation is and letting Kumar pitch, 7-8 innings a pop.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's, a big reason why he didn't go back to Vanderbilt, I think, because that would mean going deep into starts, every week throughout a competitive college season in the SEC. And I think how deep he goes here is probably going to depend on how efficient he can be. If he's throwing strikes, then you may see him go 5 or 6, but I think it's going to be a pretty tight pitch count. I'm kind of thinking of it almost like starters in the Arizona Fall League. Maybe they go 2-3 at the start and then they, build up a little bit. You may see a couple 5 innings at the end, that kind of thing. I'm thinking more back to the old days when there was more of a gap between the end of the season and the Fall League, and it would take guys to, a little longer to ramp back up. But it's going to be very controlled, as Jim said, by the player and his agent. And I'm sure teams are going to go running in. And then it's, Jim, I don't know about you, but I think it's really all going to come down to how willing they are to share medical information. And if they don't do that, then that's a huge risk, because people don't really know what the Mets saw when they walked away from signing him. So I think it's going to be very interesting how he throws. You know, if he goes out every 5-6 days and he's healthy, that's one thing and the stuff is good. But if he does that and there isn't the sharing of information, then I don't know how a team decides what to do with him.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to have to share some. It's going to be a question of how much. And you're right. Even if he went out, let's say he's throwing mid-90s with a wipeout slider and blowing guys away in the Frontier League, teams still need to see the medical information. I mean, the Mets know what they saw. I'll give the Mets credit. They haven't talked about it. I haven't talked to anybody who knows exactly what went on. I've heard a million different rumors and a million different stories. Nobody seems to know exactly even what part of the body it was. You're not going to draft this guy. If Kumar goes out and he's throwing 95 with a wipeout slider, you're still just not going to blindly draft him in the middle of the first round without seeing the medical reports. You know, I would suspect, because he's going to be pitching indie ball, that he won't go to the draft combine. If he did go to the draft combine and submitted to a physical, he would be guaranteed at least 75% of the slot value for wherever he's picked, which would give him like some cushion. You know, you still are going to have a post-draft physical, but if you did that pre-draft physical at the combine, you'd be locked into getting at least 75% of slot rather than 0% of slot, which is what Kumar was offered last year after the physical. But everybody's going to go see
Kumar Rocker, utilizing the Kumar Rocker rule, the erroneously named Kumar Rocker rule.
Right.
Yeah, because the Kumar Rocker rule wouldn't have helped Kumar last year because he didn't do the pre-draft MRI program that existed. But yeah, it's I think MLB is hoping to have more people come to the combine, and that will be one of the incentives to come and do a physical. Now, you still have to do a post-draft physical. It's not like you do this physical and somebody issues a pronouncement healthy, not healthy, and then all's good. You still will do a post-draft physical with your team, but you do have a lot more protection than you did in the past.
What is the absolute best case scenario? How high could you see him going if he comes out throwing 95 with a wipeout slider and the medicals look as good as they possibly could, which is to say that the Mets saw something last year, there was something. But what's the absolute best case scenario here?
I mean, I would say back third of the first round. And it's kind of a weird thing. Like, if, say, the medical says that, because the rumors and reports that we sort of heard is that the Mets saw something with the elbow and the shoulder, right? And that sets off all sorts of alarm bells. We don't know, right? This is all speculation. If it's just the elbow, I think teams will be more comfortable in taking him, because there are plenty of teams that don't shy away from guys who already had Tommy John surgery or need Tommy John surgery. So I think that, you know, it's going to depend on what is found there. But if there's a comfort level there, I would say somewhere around 20 to the sort of comp A round. What do you think, Jim?
I think his upward end might be a little bit higher, but you put that well, Jonathan. I mean, he could come out and throw well. I don't think we're going to have a pristine medical report. I mean, that would be kind of odd given how the Mets just ran away from him last year and didn't even try to sign him for a reduced rate. But if you have a medical report that people are comfortable with, and it doesn't have to be the whole industry, it just has to be one team, just given the lack of pitching and college pitching in this draft that's healthy, if you told me that he went 15th, I could see that. But it's very hard to answer without knowing exactly what the medical is going to tell teams.
Yeah, I was hedging my bets a little.
Okay, let's move on from Kumar. As I said, you guys are expanding the list right now. Tell us about some guys who are on the rise as you're digging into the list and getting more feedback and seeing players perform and hearing from scouts. A couple guys on the rise. Jim?
Yeah, I'll start with one. And I put him in the first round, and I probably put him on the low end. But that's Justin Crawford, who is 37th on our top 150. He'll move up when we do the top 200 next week. He's the son of Carl Crawford, plays at Bishop Gorman High in Las Vegas, which is a big time high school program. And, you know, I think I don't have my mock draft in front of me. What, I have 10 straight hitters to start off my mock draft last week?
Correct.
And it might be more than that. And I could see him even pushing his way into the top 10, perhaps. He's super athletic, you know, outfielder. This will shock you, as Carl Crawford's son, that he's athletic and can really run. You know, big shock there. Bats left-handed. He can hit. power. I think there's some question how much power he has, but it's, you know, he'll have enough, but it's going to be a bat and speed over power when all is said and done. Chance to be a plus center fielder, better arm than his dad. So I think you'll see him play center, you know, and if the power comes, you could have even a five tool outfielder. So he's just, I think guys are getting really, really excited about him. And like I said, I think I had him going 23rd to the Blue Jays in my mock, and that might be 10 or so spots too low. Like, I think he's really moving up the boards.
Are you saying he could potentially push his way into the top 10? We could have a lot of family ties in the top 10. You know, the guys at the very top, Drew Jones, Elijah Green, Jackson Holliday, Brooks Lee, all with sort of famous.
Chase Young, Daniel Cusack.
Yeah, yep. All right, Jonathan, someone from your neck of the draft that's on the rise.
Well, both these guys are from my neck of the draft, to be
honest. Oh, Jim stole one of your guys.
Oh. Yeah, no, it's totally fine. We share. And I'm staying in the same state, just a different part of the state. Robbie Snelling is from Reno. Not as much talent comes out of there as the Las Vegas area. Bishop Gorman is where Joey Gallo went to high school, among others. And, you know, Snelling is a really interesting guy because he showed, you know, pretty well on the showcase circuit over the summer. He was a very talented football player, had the chance to, you know, to go and play Division I football if he wanted to. And his name is really, really creeping up into first round conversations. Jim, I really like that you ended up putting him at 17 to the Phillies. Now, he's number 79 on our list. He's going to make a pretty large jump up. He gave up playing football. He was only going to play baseball if he goes to LSU. And, you know, he's super athletic. He's big and strong. He's, you know, up to 97. There's probably more to come. He can really spin a curveball. He's got a decent changeup. Obviously, doesn't need it as much. And he throws a lot of strikes. And his name has been moving up into these conversations where if you told me end of the day that he will be the first high school pitcher to get taken, I could believe it. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, but he's now up in the same conversation among the high school lefties with Brandon Barrera, who's from the Miami area, and Jackson Ferris, who's at IMG Academy. And some people, I think, have him ahead of either of them and maybe ahead of any of the right-handers, mostly because Dylan Lesko needed Tommy John surgery. But that middle of the first round placement where Jim put him is starting to sound more and more like it could happen.
Has Nevada become a bit more of a hotbed, high school hotbed for the draft in recent years?
Well, I think it has been for a while. I mean, you had Joey Gallo, you had Chris Bryant got a 7-figure offer out of high school. You had Bryce Harper graduated early, but he was a Nevada high school guy. Nevada is like one of those sneaky good states in terms of producing talent.
All right, guys, let's take a break and come back, talk about some upcoming changes to the top 100 prospects list. We call this internally anyway, we call it market corrections, where we're going to make some adjustments to the top 100. We have a mass graduation from our lists in the coming week. So we'll talk about that when we come back on the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. We are going to talk what we like to call around here market corrections, which is maybe a bit of a misnomer, but which one of you wants to explain this to the masses?
I'm going to defer to Jim. I think he's very good at the nuts and bolts explanation.
Okay. Well, I will take over. We do this 4 times a year, not counting our major overhauls in the offseason and after the trade deadline. But essentially, we do 3 things. One, we kind of revote on the top 15 prospects just to make sure the top of the list is where we want it. 2, we look for guys who need to make significant jumps on the list, say up or down 15 or 20 spots, roughly. You know, we're not just fine-tuning it, moving up a guy 3 spots. And then 3, guys who aren't on the list who maybe we need to add, you know, before it's time to replace guys who graduate. And we're going to tie this one in. There's a all the guys who are on opening day rosters will reach their 46th day in the big leagues on May 22nd if they've been up all year. And that's one of the rookie qualifications is you don't exceed 45 days, which we use for our prospect reports. The top 100 will look much different on Monday than it did going into the weekend.
Right. So right off the top, Witt, gone. Julio, number three, gone.
Julio's going to be gone.
And Witt might go too. Both Witt and Julio, like Julio's two at-bats away and Witt's only eight at-bats away. So they may graduate before the weekend.
Yeah.
Yep. Torkelson. So three out of the top four will be gone.
As well as, I think, Hunter Green and Jeremy Pena. So five total. But yeah, like three right off the top.
Yeah. So I mean, that without any adjustments would move Adley Rutschman back into the number one spot where he was prior to being unseated by Bobby Witt Jr. I'm going to guess that that is not going to change.
That's a good guess.
I know you guys are early in conversations about how this is all going to pan out. I am kind of curious. You won't have to consider this because these guys will be off the list. But, you know, you said that part of this is resettling the top 15 overall. Based on what you've seen early on, and it's a small sample size, but would you make any adjustments to that top four overall, Witt, Rutschman, Julio, and Torkelson in that order?
Oh, you mean if we could adjust those guys?
Yeah. If they were not graduating and we were doing this market correction prior to them graduating.
Well, I doubt we'd change it based on guys struggling in the big leagues versus Adley being hurt for much of the early season and being in the minors. I mean, you could reopen the debate again. I always feel like, I don't know why, like I'm the guy running Bobby Witt Jr. down a little bit, and I love Bobby Witt Jr. I would have taken Adley over Bobby Witt Jr. coming into the season. So personally, I would still take Adley over Bobby Witt Jr. I wouldn't be sitting here going, oh, well, Bobby Witt struggled for 6 weeks in the big league, so we got to drop it.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, Julio is the one, and you guys talked about him last week, who's starting to figure things out at the big league level at age 21. So, you know, if you wanted to do it just based on the small sample, yeah, I might go Adley, Julio, and then Witt, but I wouldn't for the reasons, you know, Jim pointed out. I do want to also point out that the mass graduation is officially in honor of Zeev Mayo's 21st birthday on May 22nd. So,
wow.
I like how that was timed.
That's another big graduation.
That's right.
Okay. So outside of the very top of the list, talk about some guys who could fall into that category of guys who make or warranting big jumps and you don't want to wait until the mid-season re-rank. And I know, like I said, you guys are in preliminary conversations as we record this about who will in fact be making moves. So this is not official, this is not set, but guys that you would advocate for that should be making big jumps.
Yeah, and again, I like the way you framed that. This is really more like this was a guy that, you know, we don't do this in a vacuum. You know, Sam Dykstra, Jim, and myself will, you know, sort of combine forces to sort of figure out who should move, you know, up and down, who should be added. But for me, the guy from my teams that I'll advocate to jump up quite a bit will be Leover Paguero, the shortstop prospect for the Pirates. He's currently at number 77, which is fine. We'll have to see what happens. But, you know, this is a guy who's 21 for all of this season. He had a good but not great year last year in high A. And this year he's in double A and he's just raking. Slash line of 322, 352, 525. You know, he's got seven steals. He plays a really, really good shortstop. That Altoona team is absolutely stacked with most of, it seems, the Pirates prospect talent. And that's a lot because it's a very deep system. And he's gone out and really performed well while jumping up to double A for the first time.
Yeah, I'm looking at some other guys who are 21 or younger in double A. You've got Corbin Carroll, who's number 19 overall. Speaking of guys raking at double A at the age of 21, he's got a 1.130 OPS, 11 home runs in just 145 plate appearances. You have Michael Harris of the Braves, who is performing pretty well, 289, 347, 481 slash line, 21 years old at double A. Paguero, you mentioned, has posted a 322, 352, 525 slash line. And then Orelvis Martinez of the Blue Jays, 20 years old at double A with an 850 OPS. And then the only teenager at double A. This guy has been consistently good this year and kind of turned it on a little bit as of late, even more. But Jordan Walker, he's ranked number 29, 19 years old, the only teenager in double A, 906 OPS. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah, most of those younger guys at AA have been performing. All right, Jim, how about someone that you think deserves to make a big leap up the top 100 list?
Well, I'm going to cross you guys up because you guys thought I was going to say Daniel Espino, wow, who I've talked about on a million podcasts. Everybody knows that. I'm going to say Kyle Harrison of the Giants, actually. You know, we've talked about him too. He's a guy who, when he was in high school, was known more for his polish than his stuff, and his stuff started to take off at the beginning of his very short high school senior season that got ended because of the pandemic. He came out in instructional league and then in pro ball, made his debut last year, and he's throwing the mid-90s up to 98 with a harder and sharper slider and just blew guys away in low A. He was the low A West pitcher of the year. And this year he's been even better. He's gone up to high A, 24 innings, 51 strikeouts, only 24 base runners. And he is continuing to maintain that stuff. He is continuing to dominate. And I think Kyle Harrison has helped himself a ton in terms of if you're lining up all the pitching prospects in baseball. So I think Kyle Harrison's a guy who makes a jump.
Yeah, he has more strikeouts than any pitcher on our top 100 prospects list. You mentioned, Jim, 51 in just 24 innings. You look at the other guys who are up there. Grayson Rodriguez has 46. Matthew Liberatore has 46. Yuri Perez has 45. Hunter Green has 44 in the big leagues. But all those guys are 32, 40, 28, 33 and a third innings. And Kyle Harrison at just 24 innings, 51 strikeouts. Not bad. Okay. Let's take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some hot prospects, both guys in the big leagues and in the minor leagues. That'll be next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff, Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, talking hot rookies in the big leagues, hot prospects in the minor leagues. Let's start in the big leagues. So preseason, we did a ranking of our top rookie of the year candidates, five in each league. We have done a re-rank of that. We also did just hot rookies, the hottest rookies of the first 2 weeks of the season, which was approximately a month ago. And now we're working on a story looking at which rookies have been hottest over the past 30 days, approximately, since that story went up. Pretty interesting, guys. If you just look at the total base leaders for rookies over the past 30 days, a couple of very familiar names at the top. Number one, Julio Rodriguez. And tied for second with Jeremy Pena is Bobby Witt Jr., both of whom, Witt and Julio, we've talked about in this podcast already. But first of all, seems like those guys are coming around. But let's talk about a couple other names, guys who have been hot over the past month. Jonathan, guy that we got pretty familiar with during the fall league last year.
Yeah, Juan Yepes is, in a lot of ways, I think he's a classic Cardinals prospect who is kind of underappreciated, ends up being a really, really good big league hitter. And if his start is any indication, then that's going to be right. You're right. We saw him in the fall league. He was one of the better performers, in the fall league overall. He had an OPS over 1,000 while he was there, was hitting pretty well in AAA. Just came up, beginning of May, and, was off to a 366, 435, 585 line with a couple of homers in just 11 games, So this is a guy who, of the guys who have played regularly in this last stretch, he's got the best OPS, 1020 OPS, and gives the Cardinals, another interesting bat. And one who, he's not a great defender, but he is capable at a number of positions. And he played, just about everywhere when he was down in Memphis. So he's played mostly corner or outfield, but he can play first base. If you need him to play third, he can probably do that. I wouldn't put him there every day, but it's the bat that looked last fall like it was going to play, and so far it's playing.
All right, and Jim, the guy you're going to talk about, honestly, for me, was a bit of a surprise. I did not realize that he was having the success that he is.
I did not either. I did not wake up this morning thinking, hey, I'm going to talk about Luis Gonzalez on the Pipeline Podcast, but here I am, and he's a guy who I do our White Sox list. I do our Giants list. The White Sox waived him last year. The Giants picked him up. He's not even ranked on our Giants list. And you know, he was a guy who White Sox took in the third round out of New Mexico in 2017. He had a really good first full season in pro ball, was one of the better hitters in the system, and then just fell off the map. He didn't perform in double A in 2019. He got two plate appearances in the big leagues in 20 during the pandemic season. And then he struggled in triple A for the White Sox, got another handful of at-bats before they waived him and the Giants picked him up. And for the season, Al was hitting 349 in 21 games, 15 RBIs, two homers, three steals. He's played great for the Giants, and Farhan Zaidi's just done a tremendous job. You know, he comes from the A's and the Dodgers, who two organizations that do a tremendous job of kind of making acquisitions on the pro side and having the guys exceed expectations. And Luis Gonzalez is doing exactly that. I don't know if he's like this year's Giants version of Lamont Wade. You know, not big tools, you know, he can do a little bit of everything. He can play all three outfield spots. I think the power is probably his worst tool, but he's got, you know, some gap power, can run a little bit, pretty good arm. He pitched some in college too. And he's been great for the Giants right now with an 889 ops. I did not see that one coming at all from Luis Gonzalez. In fact, of their guys who are semi-regulars, he has the highest ops on the Giants right now.
All right. Now I want to go off the plan here just a little bit. We did not discuss this. You were not prepared to discuss this, but I think you guys have discussed this gentleman enough over the years that you'll have something to say. Do you know which rookie pitcher these numbers belong to? 0.55 ERA, 12 games, 16 and a third innings pitched, 3 walks, 15 strikeouts, 186 average against, 0.86 whip, all 12 games in relief. Someone who made his...
Is that Joan Duran?
It's not. Someone who made his big league debut in 2019. Someone who... I want to see if I can quickly find his... highest all-time rank on the top 100 prospects list. I want to say...
I'm going to go with A.J. Puck, then. I'm guessing A.J. Puck.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, he was number 32 in 2018 is what he peaked at. What do you think? Is this the real deal? Are we going to see what we thought we were going to see all the way back in 2016, 17, 18?
Well, I think he's found his role. I mean, I think we kind of suspected for a while that he was going to wind up in relief. You know, he's not going to be this dominant. I mean, he's, you know, but I think he has the tools, if he can stay healthy, which is a big if, to be a useful reliever. I don't know that I think he's a closer, but you know, with that slider, you know, and the angle he presents, I could see him maybe being a setup man.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, could he close games? Maybe, sure. I mean, the stuff is good enough, but that slider, at the very least, you know, you bring him in to face some tough lefties. I think he's going to end up getting more and more high leverage opportunities, whether it's closing games or it's the seventh or eighth inning. You know, I could see him end up being one of these, you know, sort of newer multi-inning reliever types that have a lot of value, just because his stuff, you know, the problem wasn't the stuff. The stuff would hold up, you know, into starts. It was his command and staying healthy. So if, you know, if you'd rather use him for two or three innings and then give him a couple days off and then bring him back, then I think, you know, that might be a really, really good role for him.
Yeah. And if you look, I pulled up his Baseball Savant page. And one of the reasons I think he's having success this year is he's leaned into using the slider even more. You know, last year he used his slider about, you know, a little under, I think, a third of the time. And now he's using it, you know, like 43% of the time. And that's his pitch. He's using it against both lefties and righties. And I think that is the key. You know, I mean, when you're pitching short stints in relief, you know, we've seen a lot of guys do this. Go with what works best as long as you can. And you know, again, I don't think he's going to have the 0.55 ERA all year. But if he continues to rely heavily on the slider, I could see him having success.
Interestingly, he has been slightly more effective against right-handers than left-handers so far this year. 167 average against right-handers, 217 average against lefties.
And he's throwing more strikes than he has during his brief time in the big leagues.
He's landing that slider for strikes, or at least getting in the swing and miss. You know, that is a big key for him.
All right, guys, let's shift gears and talk about some guys who are hot in the minor leagues. Our prospect team of the week came out earlier this week, and wanted to have you guys spotlight a couple guys on that team. Jonathan, who you got?
I'm going to go with Hau-Yu Lee of the Phillies. He's the third baseman on our prospect team of the week this week. And, you know, I've been kind of keeping an eye on him because when I was in Phillies camp for spring training, and Preston Mattingly, who is the Phillies farm director now, was just raving about Lee. They signed him for about a little over $500,000 from Taiwan. And he, you know, he continued to show all spring, you know, last summer, interest that he may be a better all-around prospect than they thought. He can really hit. I mean, he only barely got his feet wet in the Florida Complex League last year, but hit very well there. And he's continued to hit this year. Now, obviously, this past week, he just completely went off. He had 455, he had four homers, he drove in 13 runs and stole a couple of bases playing third and second. He's played a bunch of shortstop this year. I don't think he's a shortstop long-term. If he's going to play one spot in the big leagues, I think it's likely going to be second base, but he has really, really good instincts. Makes him a good base runner, even though he's not a burner. You know, and for the year, he's got a 954 ops in the Florida State League, and he's still a teenager. You know, I'd like to see them promote him up a level and challenge him, because I think because he is such a good hitter with such a strong and advanced idea of what he's doing at the plate, that I think it's going to play even if he moves up a level at such a young age.
All right, Jim, and someone from this week's prospect team of the week that tickles your prospect fancy?
That would be Michael Busch, who's having an all-around great year for the Dodgers. And I'll give you guys a quick quiz. Michael Busch is one of three players to make two of the first five prospect teams of the week in 2022. Do you know who the other two players are?
Shea Langeliers.
I know Langeliers made it in back-to-back weeks.
Shea Langeliers is one. The other guy's not a top 100 guy, but he's in the same organization as Michael Busch.
It's not Leonard, is it?
It's not Edius Leonard who made the list this week.
I think you might just have to tell us.
I mean, we're just going to have dead air until you guys figure it out.
I mean, I could go and look it up.
I've got all day. Like, we can keep going. Now, it's Miguel Amaya. Jacob Amaya. It'd be nice if I got his name. I'm conflating Miguel Vargas and Jacob Amaya into one super prospect who can cover the whole left side infield. It's shortstop Jacob Amaya, who is Michael Busch's organization mate in the Dodgers. And, you know, Busch is a guy who was one of the best offensive players in the entire 2019 draft. And you know, he really didn't have much of a chance to show what he could do when healthy. He got hit on the right hand by a pitch in his pro debut. We saw him briefly in the fall league. And then last year he had the pandemic year, so he didn't get to play that year. Then last year he started to play and got off to a good start. And then he got hit by on the right hand again and struggled before finishing strong. And he's, you know, he's a guy who can hit for average. He can hit for power. He controls the strike zone. He's gotten, you know, he's not, you know, a burner by any means, but he's gotten quicker and more athletic and does a decent job at second base. And for the season now, he's gotten 11-12 ops in the minors in Double A. He's got 17 extra base hits. He's got, you know, 24 walks and in 31 games. And this is the Michael Busch the Dodgers thought they were getting. So I think he's a guy who we could see him. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw him in the big leagues, if there's room for him, because the Dodgers are so talented, making contributions by the end of the season.
All right. That prospect team of the week is up on MLB.com/pipeline. Make sure you check that out. Check out the best performers of the past week among prospects in the minor leagues. Looking ahead, wanted to give everybody a little taste of what is on tap on MLB.tv this week. If you've been listening to the podcast, you know, we've talked over the past couple of episodes about the fact that we are bringing top prospects and top minor league matchups to you on MLB.tv. You can watch these games for free. We're trying to do about a game per day with the exception of Friday, and there are no games for the most part on Mondays. So we're looking at about 5 games a week. And to give you a little sample of what you can see, this week's slate looks like this. As we're recording, Akron at Binghamton. So we've got the Rubber Ducks and the Rumble Ponies. I don't know if you can get a better matchup than that. Rubber Ducks, Rumble Ponies, 11 a.m. start. 6 top 100 prospects between those two teams on the rosters. The Mets big three, each of their top 3 prospects, Alvarez, Beatty, Mauricio. And as we're recording this, Mauricio has gone deep for the Rumble Ponies. Bo Naylor led off the game with a home run for Akron. So very nice matchup there. The rest of the week's schedule, Lake Elsinore at Visalia, little Jordan Lawler action. He's been fantastic. Thursday, we have Richmond, Giants affiliate, facing the aforementioned Altoona lineup that Jonathan, you mentioned, which that lineup is stacked, even more so with Henry Davis there now. Some of those guys are not hitting. Oh, you also talked about, we've talked about Paguero. He's there as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice little lineup. No Quinn Priester yet, and I think you have a bit of an update there.
Yeah, he had a flare-up of an oblique issue like right at the end of spring training, and obviously erring on the side of caution. He's getting built up now. There's no official timetable, but he's throwing 3 side sessions a week. So he's probably a couple weeks off. My guess is he'll be there. I'm going to guess, and this is pure guess, but by the beginning of June, if they're going to be like super, super cautious. But he's working his way back. He's totally healthy now. They're just making sure he gets enough work in before they send him out.
Yeah, that's a really nice roster. And Altoona has 6 of the Pirates' top 11 prospects. You can check them out. That game's on Thursday. On Saturday, over the weekend, we have Tulsa at Amarillo. Jim, there's your team, your Tulsa team with Bush.
No, Bush. Bush got I was going to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
I was stumbling because I was going to call Michael Bush, Jacob Amaya's double play partner, Tulsa, and our player page listed him with Oklahoma City, but his stats said Tulsa, and I was like not able to search quick enough while I was talking. He actually got promoted to AAA Oklahoma City today. So watch that game. There's still going to be Dodgers prospects there. You can see Jacob Amaya, Andy Pahaes, against Corbin Carroll and Blake Walston, but you cannot watch Michael Bush on Saturday on MLB TV.
It's because he made Prospect Team of the Week.
Twice. See, they told him, if you make it twice, we'll promote you.
Yep.
It was in his contract.
Jacob Amaya is on a different plan, though, so he's got to make it 3 times.
And I think there's a chance we could see Bobby Miller that day, which would be nice. It's always hard to pin down the pitchers, but there is a chance based on how frequently he's been pitching, his turn in the rotation, that he could pitch in that game, which would be nice.
You can make some calls when we get off the podcast, Jason, to make that happen.
We'll see what we can do. And then Sunday, tasty little matchup between Biloxi and Mississippi with Sal Frelich, Michael Harris, the big names there, Joey Wehmer for Biloxi as well. So 3 top 100 prospects, a bunch of big prospect matchups on the horizon on MLB.tv this week. You can watch those games. You can find them just about anywhere. You can see them on MLB.com/pipeline. If you follow the MLB Pipeline Twitter account, we'll point you in the right direction. You can see them on the Major League Parent Org websites. They're streamed right there. You can log on to MLB.tv and find them there. We're putting them all over the place. So make sure you're tuning into those. All right, let's wrap up by answering a question from the mailbag. This comes from Pirates 2026 wildcard participant, whose Twitter handle is the unforgettable at A837361. Assuming your Pirates prediction is true, get back to that in 1 second, which top prospect would the Pirates move to outfield given Hayes will operate third base moving forward? Paguero, Lee, Gonzalez. So that Pirates prediction that A837361 is referring to there was, Jim, your latest mock draft had Lee going to the Pirates. And so he's saying, if that's true, what happens with the Pirates infield?
Well, here's what I think. I will step in. I know Jonathan is Mr. Pirate, but since the question was directed to me initially on Twitter, I will answer first.
Please.
Yes, I agree. Cabrian Hayes will be the third baseman of the future. I think Leivera Peguero winds up being the shortstop of the future. I think Brooks Lee could certainly move to second base. I think he's a better second baseman than Nick Gonzalez. And I think Nick Gonzalez and O'Neill Cruz, who are right now middle infielders, eventually will move to the outfield. So that is how I envision all of that playing out. How about you, Jonathan?
You know, I'd love to pound the table and say that's wrong, but I think you're right. I think that makes the most sense. Peguero is such a good pure shortstop that it would be a mistake. He's athletic enough where he could go play the outfield. I'm sure he would be fine, but I don't think Brooks Lee is a shortstop at the big league level, even though he would like to be. Would he be acceptable there? Maybe. We'll have to wait and see. But I do think that what ends up happening is what you're saying. Peguero is at short. Brooks Lee plays second base. And then you've got O'Neill Cruz maybe in one corner and Nick Gonzalez in the other. I think that makes the most sense. Gonzalez's defense at second has never been his strongest suit. So, I think you might see guys moving around a little bit. O'Neill Cruz is, getting reps in left field right now, but he's still playing a lot of shortstop. So you might see some mixing and matching and things of that nature. But I think when all is said and done, if you're going to have a steady regular lineup, that's what you're going to end up seeing.
All right. Thank you to 883-7361 for that question. And thanks to everybody for listening. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.